And welcome to the Steam Power Podcast. Chicka 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 chicka.
Live from beautiful downtown Southern Maryland and Orlando, Florida, it's the Steam Power Podcast, episode number 61 for 25th of February 2015. We are a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to bringing you the latest and the greatest and the quirkiest of science, technology, engineering, art, and math news, as well as the latest and the greatest from the maker and open source worlds. Steam Power, the power to change the world. And it's only Mike this week. So with that, it's time to get steamy. A few months back, I did a interview episode with my friend Scott, who was a master electrician traveling around the world doing some really cool little projects, and got a lot of feedback, good feedback from that one. So we're going to try to recreate that tonight with another one of my friends who is a professor at Full Sail University, and he is a professor of the mobile arts. He does mobile app development and teaches that at Full Sail as a professor. So I won't steal too much of his thunder, but suffice it to say, if you've never heard of Full Sail University, do yourself a favor and go to fullsail.edu. You can also, I guess, just go ahead and Google that as well. But it is, it's a university with a different take and a very specialized curriculum. It is for basically the entertainment industry, the media industry, mobile games, mobile app development, movie production, music production. So it has its very specific focus. You're not going to go there and like get a bachelor's degree in physics, but from a technology perspective, what they do there is really, really awesome. And it's very cutting edge. And it's we also talk a little bit about the actual curriculum and the pace of the curriculum itself, and it's different, and I think it's really cool. I think it's something that other technical professions should look at as a way to mirror the combination of real world practical along with the classroom academic. And I'll save it again. The interview's great. It's an old scouting buddy, Mike Seeley, from, guess God, probably been out of scouts almost 15, 20 years now, closer to 20. I don't want to admit that. But anyway, it's something that I think, especially, you know, if you're curious about the video game industry, movie production, it's great from that angle. It's also great just from thinking about how we teach and how we bring practical, real world, along with the academic. And anyway, I am going to go ahead and shut up and get off of here so you can get right to the interview. But with that, so that's kind of the stage is set, and we'll go ahead now. This is my interview with Mike Seeley, professor of Full Sail University. Hope you enjoy. All right. It says we're online. Hopefully my internet will not drop out. So what I'm going to end up doing is people that are watching this on YouTube will see the kind of unfiltered, unedited version. And then when I do the download and make it into the little MP3 file, we'll clean it up and I'll put a front end and a back end to this thing. But, so anyway, with me, this, evening is my good friend and old scouting buddy, who, you know, when I used to be a jerk to them all. But then I grew up and realized not to be a jerk anymore. But he took it well, and he is now a fine young man because, well, relative speaking, we're all getting old.
We're all old people.
We're all old people now. We're getting – it's like – it's sad. It really is. But so his name is Mike as well, Mike Seeley. He is a professor, right? Professorial?
Yeah. That's what they call us down here sometimes.
Professor at Full Sail University, which, so you kind of give you a little background too. I was aware of Full Sail thanks to, what was the name, the Film Riot podcast or videocast or YouTube channel or whatever it is that they are.
Not familiar with that one.
So I guess the guy, his name was Ryan Connolly. He went, I think he went there back in, what, how long have you guys been around?
Full Sail, I think, just celebrated like their 36th anniversary.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
We haven't been at university for a very long time. I think we started as a university in 2008. They started out as a recording workshop up in Chicago, and then in like the back of a bus, moved down to Florida, set up as a recording arts associates program, and then expanded into other media entertainment industries. And now we are, I think we offer something like 36 undergrad degrees and I think 8 master's programs. So, and ever expanding. So.
Yeah, because I looked at the website before, like you're trying to be semi-serious about doing this podcasting, and I was like, and the last time I looked at it probably was when I came down to visit you guys, like two years ago now? Almost 2 years?
Oh, wow, yeah, it's probably been about a year and a half, yeah, something like that.
And time flies when you're getting old. exactly. Well, you really did, though, right? You moved down.
Yeah, I moved down here. I actually went to school at Full Sail. I started school back here in 2007. We were actually called Full Sail Real World Education right before they became a university. I actually heard about the school. You said you heard about it through somebody else's podcast or YouTube channel. I originally heard about the school because I wanted to make video games, and I was reading through different game companies, and Square Enix was the big one that I wanted to work for, and they actually recommended to either go to DigiPen out in California or Full Sail University or Full Sail Real World Education down here in Florida. So this one was a lot closer, so I came down to Full Sail, and I don't regret it. It's been awesome.
I'm trying to remember. Like, I left the Glen Burnet area in 1999.
That's Merchant Marines, right?
That's URA Merchant Marine. That didn't go anywhere. You know, I liked being out at sea. I didn't like being out at sea for like 13 months at a time.
Well, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, that was the killer for me. Like, you're always out at sea. So I went to the Navy, and we were at sea less.
Which doesn't make any sense. The Navy, the people who are always on the water.
Yeah, you know, moving goods actually takes more work than blowing bad guys up. Go figure.
That's impressive.
You know, I think about it, when really has the last time, like, World War II was the real last big Navy-to-Navy battles. You know,
Yeah, probably the last big Navy to Navy battles, but I mean, there's lots of, they do patrols and drills all the time and, you know, shows of force out in,
that's right,
like around the Mediterranean, I think, in the eastern part of the Mediterranean. And
we got our friends with the Libyans, yeah, they're all always nice guys.
All those other places you hear about on the news.
Yep. But anyway, this is not about the Navy or me, this is about you and Full Sail University. So let's go back. So you graduated, well, you would have been in high school, what, 2002?
Five.
You're really that much younger. God damn.
Yeah, I'm that much younger. So.
So 2005, graduate. You want to go work. You have your dream to work for a video game company. You're researching your stuff. You figure out you want to go to Full Sail. How did that actually happen?
So I kind of knew that I wanted to make video games just because, I mean, everybody has like that one career that they dream of like as a kid. And for me, I played video games all the time. So it was like, oh, I really want to make video games. So in high school, I started taking like some just basic programming classes. Like I still did like COBOL and Fortran because apparently that was still a thing at the time. I finally did like some Visual Basic stuff. And then when I hit my junior year for the first time at my school, which was Chesapeake High School up in Pasadena, they just started offering an AP Computer Science class for the very first year. So I jumped in on that. I took the A class in my 11th grade year and the AB class in my 12th grade year. And programming just seemed like lots of fun. So I knew I wanted to go to Full Sail because, I was, like I said, I was reading around on different game companies' websites and saw that the one that I wanted to work for recommended this school, so I went ahead and came. I wanted to come to this school, but I wanted to make sure that it was still something I'd enjoy after a couple of years, so I didn't want to just rush into it. I've always been an old man who considers everything first, so I actually went to the community college up at Anne Arundel Community College for 2 years. I took an assembly programming class because that was part of the associate's program there, which I never finished. I went ahead and just skipped the associate's and went right to my bachelor's degree. But I took the assembly class, and I took another Java class. I took a C++ class just to see if programming was still something that I'd enjoy. And after liking it for 2 years, I figured, what the hell, and it came on down.
Either I'm crazy or I love this stuff.
Either I'm crazy or it's actually fun. So.
I hear you.
Still not entirely decided. It could be I'm just crazy. So.
Yeah, but it's still relatively young. So the stuff that you did up at Anne Arundel Community College, did that transfer down, or were you starting from scratch, sort of?
Some of it, like the concepts and the ideas and the things that I've learned, the knowledge transferred down. Credits didn't, just because most of our programs here are really focused and specialized on the one thing that you want to do. So while I had taken programming classes before and learned some programming, it was more of, this is programming that we use in games. This is the type of programming we do, and then everything's focused towards what you're doing. Like the very first class I was in, I was actually just telling somebody about this at the game, like the other day, the first class we take is Programming 1. It's a simple programming basics course, but you still make like console-based games in the class. So everything's focused towards how do I do programming and do it towards games. So the knowledge transferred, some of the concepts, but not credits exactly. So
that's, and you hit on a point that, because I also did this a couple of months back with Scott. Mm-hmm. He went the professional electrician route, and he went through the schooling through the unions and whatnot, and contrast that to someone like me who went to the quote unquote traditional college system, right? And one thing that always frustrated me was how many classes I had to take that had nothing to do with my degree.
Oh yeah.
With the theory that we're going to make you more well-rounded, right? So it's like, yeah, I'm an engineering major, but go take a music class and take, and I appreciate the idea of becoming more well-rounded. Mm-hmm. I just don't think that me having to pay because basically that comes out to a good.
It's about $1,500 a class sometimes.
Right. And so over the course of, having to take like 2 humanities, 2 arts classes, I mean, I pretty much am in school for an extra semester and a half, mm-hmm. more than I would have. And I think in this day and age, there's so much other opportunity to get well-rounded that mm-hmm. college, university in the traditional sense. To me, it just seems like now we're just basically, milking people for an extra couple $1,000 of tuition.
Yeah, I mean, and a lot of public education, a lot of public universities are hurting for money. So a lot of those gen ed classes that are required that people will go in and take, they make a ton of money off of those kind of classes. Like I said, I was going for an associate's degree. I mean, I never finished it, but I still went ahead and took the classes that were required. So I took a couple of Japanese language classes because I was interested in Japanese language, and I figured, I need a fine arts credit, so I do this. I took a classical guitar class that I don't remember anything except for how to play Green Sleeves out of that class. I couldn't read the music or anything. I can play Green Sleeves like the first up until the first repeat, and then that's it. That's all I remember from those classes. I remember paying a lot of money for them, but that was about it. I mean,
so it sounds like Full Sail to me. You guys, the thought down there is to be much more practical, hands-on, and I think, does that translate to the means you're from the day you start to the day you got in your first job? Is it 4 years like a traditional undergrad, or can you do it in a shorter period of time?
So we do things a little bit differently down here. Well, actually, we do things a lot differently. So instead of the traditional semester-based classes where you're in the same class for like 1 or 2 days a week for 3 months or whatever it is. Our students go to school on campus 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and they do 1 to 2 classes a month. So whereas you normally do a 4-credit class in 3 months, we do a 4-credit class in 1 month. And then you just go to school year-round. We don't do like summer breaks and winter breaks. So I think we have 2 weeks in the winter for the holidays, and 1 week in the summertime around 4th of July. But otherwise, we go to school 12 months out of the year, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, and you end up graduating in 21 months. So.
21 months?
21 months. We measure things in months around here, not really semesters.
So. Sweet. See, I think you guys have a, I don't know what you call it, a framework, a mindset, a something about education that to me, I think the rest of education needs to catch up on.
Yeah, we take the approach of trying to mirror the industry. So like most of the industries that you're in, you don't take 3 months out of the year off just because it's the summertime, and you still go to work during the summertime. So we take the approach of you immerse yourself in whatever it is that you want to do for your career, and then as long as you, because like try to learn a new language. The best way to learn a new language after learning a couple conversational phrases is to usually go and immerse yourself in the language, go visit a country, stay for a few weeks or a month, and actually speak with native speakers. So the way we take it here is you immerse yourself in it, and you go to school year-round, and you go on the same schedule that you would if you were in the industry, and you're hands-on all the time. So figure if you have that more immersive approach, you have more hands-on, it's more practical when you get out the industry that you can jump right in as if you were doing it for 2 years because you kind of have been doing it for 2 years.
See, we have an issue where, like, in my day job world, finding engineers and scientists, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's hard enough as is just because those majors aren't being produced at the rate that we need. But even, and I'll admit, you know, even when I came out of college, you know, 12, 13, 14, 15, whatever years ago now, you know, I'll be the first to admit that I had a very good theoretical understanding of things. I had some practical knowledge, but there is a huge divide, you know, in the electrical computer engineering world from what I learned as an undergraduate to what was actually needed out in industry, government, military. That world was like, it was so far between because our issue was, and I think my school's gotten better since then, we didn't have a really good connection to private industry. And a lot of people that were teaching there got their PhDs in, like, you know, 1960-something, 1970s, before there was even personal computers. And now they're teaching computer engineering classes based on an academic, you know, experience that's so dated.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty big problem. I know the accrediting commission that we use for the school is the Accrediting Commission for Career Schools and Colleges. They actually require 4 years of practical industry experience in your field to become a teacher. It's not just you can't go through academics and then jump right into teaching. You have to have some sort of hands-on experience before starting to teach here too. Because that's a huge problem, especially like I work in the mobile development industry. That's always been my thing. I wanted to make games, but when I graduated, game companies were laying people off. So Android, we had just come out a couple months prior. So I jumped into Android, and I started learning that. And that's what I've done since I've graduated. And that changes every 3 to 6 months. It completely changes. So, like, if I took what I learned, I graduated 2009. If I took what I learned in 2009 and applied it to today, everybody would be building for an Android platform that is no longer supported and hasn't been for about 4 years now. So I think it's got
exactly.
It has a less than 0.01% market share. So it's not going – I'm not going to teach anybody anything that's relevant if that's the only experience that I had. So I also like – I mean, I don't know how it is in most other fields. I mean, some industries, like we do have recording arts programs and film programs that the industry changes quite often, but it doesn't change in a major way more than – like it doesn't change as fast as that, maybe every couple years. New camera technologies, like 4K just came out. So think of how long 1080p was a standard video format for a long time, and now 4K is just coming out. There's a good 4 or 5 year period where – you don't have to update any of your camera tech classes or anything. So I'm in a situation where Android always comes out with something new every 3 to 6 months. We have to always keep things up to date, learn new things. So it's one of the things we always stay up to date. And just by having that hands-on approach, it helps us stay up to date all the time. All of our instructors have to keep up to date the same way that all of our students do. So,
let me ask you this, because I know in my world, especially in the, you know, the federal sector right now, with budgets being so horrible, the ability to keep up is a financial, it really comes down to financial, right?
It's always a financial limitation, because you have engineers that you're paying that you need them to work on something that, to keep up to date on a lot of these new things, you got to actually give them some time to actually take a moment, read up on new documentation, try out a couple new projects, learn how things work. You don't always get the time for it, because everybody has to be paid to do something. And if you're going to be paying somebody money and you don't have a lot of it, that person's going to have to be working on actual projects and make money. So,
what about these beautiful photos of the campus and all the in the classrooms and it looks like labs and whatnot? Mm-hmm. Does Full Sail invest in keeping those up to date as well?
Yes, we actually they're renovating a couple new spaces right now. I know when I came to school here, we had one of the game dev labs that we had was a room full of at the time, what was state-of-the-art, like Alienware computers that were hardcore gaming rigs, because it was a class where we did a lot of it was our one class, because we're mostly programmers. We have computer animation programs here that do more of the graphic side of things, but they had a class where we get to learn about graphics and actually integrate with graphical editors, and so we had the most up-to-date, top-of-the-line gaming computers, because they were also the best for rendering, because they had some of the best graphic cards and everything. And when I graduated, when I started, they were really great, and then the way computers were running at the time, like every year, they got infinitely better. By the time I graduated, the lab had been replaced, and then when I came back to work here about a year and a half ago, the lab was completely different yet again. So, and we all run Apple hardware, so most of our students run Apple hardware, mainly in our degree, because we do iOS development. You need to have an Apple computer. But we actually just all upgraded to the Retina MacBooks, because that's what the newest standard is. That's what Apple says. This is our new development machine. This is our new machine. We're not even going to make the non-Retinas anymore. So we're in the process now of updating the Retinas. Our department's done it. A couple other ones are working on it. So, we have to stay up to date, because if we don't graduate students who are up to date, then nobody's going to want to hire them, and nobody wants to hire our graduate students who aren't going to want to come here. So,
right. It becomes a circle.
It's a giant circle. So it all spawns from us having to stay up to date all the time. So.
So let's talk a little bit about what you actually do day to day. So you are, a professor. You're talking about you're focused now on mobile development, but you showed me earlier before we started, some of your students were working like, some Arduino projects, I guess, mm-hmm. that would interface through like an Android or an iOS app. So what does Mike Seeley do day to day to help Full Sail University fulfill their mission and not go down that spiral downward to hell and back?
Yeah, well, I have it pretty easy. Most months, I mean, I do have occasional months where I'm swamped. I'm working under the gun this month, because I'm actually in the process of writing new content to update for some new stuff that came out in the latest version of Android, and then Android Studio, which is the development environment for Android, has just got updated to Android 1.1, and the Android Developer Channel is putting out a whole new video series on their introduction to Android Studio. And I had been using it since it hit version 0.9, because I was an Eclipse guy. I was kind of well entrenched, so I didn't want to switch. I was kind of hoping they'd support both. They didn't. So they started coming out. I started with 0.9. And I just watched this video last night. I mean, I've been using this for 5 months now, and I learned something from their video last night. So now I'm in the process of adding this into the DevByte series into the class, the information into some of our course materials, and relaunching that next month. But when I'm not swamped and writing new curriculum all the time, I work on projects. I still take on side projects from clients. Not nearly as many as I used to when I was between jobs. I took on a lot of clients just because that's what I needed to do. But I take on occasional ones now. I kind of work on projects that I find are interesting, clients who want to work with the most up-to-date stuff, because most of your clients are going to want to work with whatever has the largest market share.
Right. So
in the mobile world, if you're on Apple, the largest market share is usually the most up-to-date OS, where on Android, it might be the year-old OS is the biggest market share. But if I teach, like, my students something that's a year old, and they graduate a year and a half from now, what they're learning is no longer useful. So I always try to find clients that want to work with the latest versions of Android, people who are more forward-thinking, who know that in the next 6 months it's going to be the largest version. They just have to, you know, trust that it's going to be the next big thing. So so I try and take on some clients. But most of the time I answer questions from students. A couple days a week I spend grading, because we do mostly weekly turn-ins for our assignments for larger projects. So a couple days a week I'm grading. Most of the time I'm helping students. And then 3 days a week I actually lecture here on campus. So.
Okay, so that's another question. Is this a – can you do this online, or do you have to come to Full Sail, or is it some combination?
Both.
Okay.
We do both. Our campus program does have a couple online classes that you take while you're on campus, but you usually have a campus class that goes with it, so you'll show up for the campus for one and then have another one that's online. Sometimes you'll have one campus class and nothing else. One time you just have – just you'll have two campus classes. That's usually kind of rough, but our students deal with it quite well. We also have an online program. The online program moves a little bit slower pace. We do 32 months instead of 21 months. You do one class at a time. That's just because we realize that, you know, people who are taking it online have, you know, jobs and families and a life, so they can't always devote all their attention to two classes, so we do one class a month. And same coursework as we do on campus is online, same content. It's just we move at a little bit slower pace for online students. But we have a version of both. So we can do it all online. You do it all on campus. We also have a hybrid program where you can start online then move to campus, or start on campus and move to online. So.
Cool. So day in day, so you're lecturing, you have assignments, they turn them in, you grade them, you go through them. Is it more project based? Is the grading more? Are there, I guess, another way to put this, is there quizzes, homeworks, tests, or is it more just, here's a project that will help, you know, you'll learn some skills that will be applicable to, you know, what you do in the real world eventually?
Everybody does their class a little different. I mean, we're one of the few schools that allows, like, a little bit more freedom for the instructor. So whereas some schools you'll show up, especially if you're an adjunct, you'll show up, you'll be given some curriculum and be told, this is what you teach, these are the assignments, this is how you grade them. Our instructors are allowed to set up their class however they want. Like, they have certain objectives that need to be met, learning outcomes that need to be met for the class, but otherwise the curriculum can be structured in different ways. For my class personally, I set things up a little differently between online and campus. It's the same content, just different assignments. So more of our campus students would do longer weekly assignments so that they can work at their own pace and turn them in when they're done, so that they don't have to do things every single day. They could, you know, maybe one day they can work for 10 hours on this classwork, maybe the next day they can only work two. So if I had daily assignments, then they do really well one day and then maybe really poorly the next. So online we do more weekly projects, and they're complete projects. They're the first one I have in my class it's a media player. It uses service and notifications. It uses the Android Media Playback classes. It's a fully functioning media player that you could give to anybody and they could play the music on their phone with. For our campus students, I do things a little bit differently. I do, instead of four weekly projects, one for each week, we do 2 week-long projects that are given as homework throughout the class. And then each day they come to class, we do 4 hours of lecture and then 4 hours of lab, which after a while you run out of to talk about it. You stop wanting to hear yourself speak after 4 hours.
So that's pretty hardcore, man.
Yeah, we get the students get it rough down here, but it's like I said, we immerse them in what they're doing. So the 4 hours of lab works out really well though, because that's 4 hours where they're in a classroom, minimal distractions, and I can give them a full project to work on every single day. So the projects are obviously much smaller in scope than I would give for a week-long assignment, but right, each one is a very specific project. It has one main function to it, uses whatever materials they learn for the day, and they do the project, and at the end of lab, they would turn it in, or if they didn't quite finish it, they'd take it home. And I think the way our platform is set up for submissions, they have until midnight that night to get it turned in. And then I also do, it's a quick quiz every single day, just on previous day's material, just kind of, hey, just remember we did this last time. They're weighted really low. It's just a way to kind of get people to not forget everything they learned 2 days ago, because otherwise people will start brain dumping, like, all right, I learned this day, but now I have another project I have to do, so I'm going to learn the next thing the next day. So kind of a way to get them to retain things between classes. So
it seems like, you know, again, going back to the quote-unquote traditional, like, deal, I guess we have old media, we have old education now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the academic obviously is a lot less intense. You know, maybe you're lucky to have maybe one or two one-hour lectures a week, some classes less than that even. And it's, you know, again, it's very academic, and the way you're expected to offset gain additional experiences to go out and get internships while you're in school or during your summer break or whatever. But it sounds like you guys, because the workload is I would say a little bit more intense, and you're lecturing and you're in lab longer, it sounds like that is the real world experience that you're getting. Do any of your students, though, are there any of them really crazy that, like, even on top of doing all this work, they still do, you know, something else on the side? Because you're down in Orlando, and I'm assuming, you know, there's lots of opportunities.
Yeah, Orlando is actually trying to become a new tech hub for the country. Some of the companies down here, like EA Tiburon is down here. They make all of your Madden sports games. There's Echo Interactive Group, which is a mobile development company that's located downtown. They just opened up we're a partner in opening up a co-working space called Canvas downtown. They're actually trying to start a technology conference down here, the Orlando X Conference or Orlando XI Conference. I don't remember the name of it. They've been talking about it for a while now. I haven't had the opportunity to read too much on it, though. There are a lot of technology companies down here, a lot of tech jobs. The simulation industry is huge down here, so people who want to move from mobile to get into simulation. We also have simulation degrees on campus. We partner with a lot of those companies. However, I don't know of many of my students that have jobs or internships at those, just because, one, they're in class 40 hours a week.
Right. It's already a job, basically.
It's already a job, and I do give them homework on top of that. So they're in class for 40 hours a week, and they still have things to do after they get out of class. And that, in addition to the school running, you know, 12 months out of the year, we also run 24 hours a day. So we have classes that run 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., 1 p.m. to 9 p.m., 5 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And then, like, some of our film programs are recording programs. Like, the film students that need to shoot at night, right. We actually have a full studio backlot where they can shoot a couple, I think it's like five different film settings. But if they need access to one of them on a night shift, then they might even have class at 1 a.m. to 9 a.m. We run 24 hours a day. The school is always open. We use a badge system, as you would see at most companies, to get in and out. So it's pretty intense. So, I mean, and their schedule changes every month. Like, my class this month is 9 to 5. Last month, my class was 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. So it's not really conducive to having a job, because you don't know when you're going to be in class. I don't know when I'm going to be in class next month until the schedule for next month gets finalized. So on Monday, I'll have class, I assume, either Monday or Tuesday. And as soon as the schedule comes out, I'll know and then can plan for my next month. So pretty awesome. Intense.
It's so different than the traditional academic, and I love it.
Yeah,
it's practical, and it seems like it works.
Yeah, I mean, you're always working, but surprisingly, like, having been a student here, like, I'm okay with saying it, because, I mean, most of my students are pretty swamped in work right now, but you still find time in all of that to work on side projects. Like, you don't necessarily have the time to, you know, go out and find a job and work a steady job just because of the hours are being crazy, but the way you work, I mean, this isn't a you pick your classes you want to take either. This is the 21 months, here's your schedule, this is the classes you're going to go to. Whoever's in that first class with you, assuming everybody passes and moves on, you're in that same cohort from day one of school till the day you graduate.
Oh, that's so cool too.
You build friendships in those classes. You find people who have similar interests. Most of the people have similar interests because you're all in the same degree program, and you work on projects on the side. So,
what's the average cohort class size?
It's very different based off of the different degree programs.
Okay. In your case.
In our case right now, our campus program is usually, I believe we're running somewhere around like 10 to 15 students in a cohort. Some of our larger programs start with larger classes, much larger classes, and then they'll split them into separate groups at different time slots to kind of account for that. Ours is also, we do staggered starts right now, so we unofficially start classes every other month. We do technically start every month, but we kind of group our students around so that our cohorts get a little bit bigger if they get too small. So we don't ever want to send a student through with a cohort of one, like if it's a slow enrollment month. Or just the same, we wouldn't want to start somebody in a cohort of like 30 people. We want to try and hit that, you know, the nice student to teacher ratio, so that you don't have one instructor being overwhelmed or students who aren't getting their questions answered. And then you also don't want to have that awkward one-on-one situation where you're standing up lecturing to one person.
I sign up for that. I enjoy that. That's awesome.
I had an interesting situation come up where, because we do have classes in December, but it's because it's crammed between two holidays. Instead of our normal, like some our classes would either run like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. We were running like Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. So we were trying to cram extra days in so you still get the same amount of class time in the more compressed schedule between the holidays. So most people try and take off the month of December just because it's a compressed month and they don't want to kill themselves with work in the shorter period of time. So I had just the right number of like students withdrawing for a month or taking a month off and other people just moving ahead a little bit faster. And then I ended up, I think it was last month with a one-person cohort, that he rejoined another cohort. So he's got more students in his class this month, but last month it was just me and him. So
how's it going, buddy? Oh, that's awesome. Application process. Is it, you online download an application or do you fill out online, or is it a traditional kind of application process, or do you have to provide like some sort of portfolio showing prior work? How does that work?
We have an online application that you can fill out, and then once it's received here, we have a team of enrollment guides who actually reach out to you and, you know, see what your interest is, you know, beyond the things of, you know, when would you like to start, because that is important. We do want students to come here. But at the same time, we also want to make sure that they get to the right program. Like a lot of students will sign up for one program thinking it's going to be X, but it's not. And so our enrollment guides will talk them through, you know, this, what are you actually interested in? You know, what do you like to do? And then they'll try and steer them to the right program. So, like commonly, we have two programs here. One's the recording arts program, and we also have a music production program. So, which sound pretty similar, but the recording arts program focuses more on the technical engineering side, working consoles, mixing music, whereas the music production side is more of a composition degree. So, look at some students that come here that they want to work on the consoles, but they like the sound of music production, so they want to go the music production degree. But then that's what our enrollment guides are here for, to find out, you know, they actually want to work the console. This is a degree that would probably be a better fit for you. This is where you could be more successful. So after applying, an enrollment guide will usually reach out to you. They're really good with the one-on-one interaction. Then they also work you through any scholarships that we're offering at the time, because we offer different scholarships at different times of the year. And then they'll also try and work you through filling out your FAFSA and enrollment process and financial aid and everything.
Cool. So that's another. So you can go through the normal federal student aid and help.
Yep.
Awesome. I'm trying to think what else. I'm going down my list here of other questions. So, Professor Extraordinaire, you also love. You said you love. You know, and who? What? You know. Dude doesn't playing lots of video games.
Yeah, video games all the time.
what other hobbies or other things, and you can't answer with sleep. You've already told me that one too.
Oh, man.
What else do you do to help, you know, and is it something that you do that directly, you know, reinforces what you do as a day job or as a consultant, or is there other weird hobbies you do that just are for you or fun, exciting?
I have lots of little hobbies. Most of them I don't get a chance to do as often anymore. The one that I like to do all the time, and my wife tells me all the time, this isn't a hobby, it's actually work. I program a lot in my spare time. So I don't make games for a living, but games have always been that thing that I like to do. So, in addition to playing them all the time, which, I was telling you earlier, I've been playing a lot of Destiny lately. To the point where my wife is kind of getting mad at me for playing too much Destiny. I play around with the Unity game engine and I start making games. Before I got into Unity, I did some XNA stuff before Microsoft killed it off. Just made a couple XNA games for like Windows Phone and the Xbox Live Indie Games channel. Just things that I enjoyed doing. It was always it's an opportunity for me to work on something that I don't typically work on every day. It's a way to kind of challenge myself with just learning how to do something new, or learn how to program something a different way. Learning about games kind of ruined games for me because now I'll play a game and then immediately try and figure out how they did that or figure out how they did that and then just try and replicate it. So I'll play a game, find something that's pretty cool, and then try to replicate it myself. The most recent one that I tried to do was actually there's a fight in Destiny where you start to go blind and they get like this black sludge thing coming in from the screen till it's and it starts like getting the lines between the sludge, like it's dripping in, and then just finally till you go completely blind and you can't see anything. So I tried to replicate a shader on how to do that. Didn't make it work right. Mine's just more of a black circle that closes in. Still working on that one, but I play around with things like that. I started toying around with Arduino just because I've always been a software guy that I've been kind of interested in how to integrate software and hardware a little bit more. I think the first project I was going to try and work on that I haven't actually got around to doing yet, I went through all the starter projects with the Arduino Uno board because they came with the whole starter kit from the Arduino website. I was trying to make like an automatic dog food dispenser for my dog so I don't have to like listen for him to whine in my face that he wants food, and then I can go feed him. I could just like press a button and it would go feed him, or it would feed him on a timer. Never got around to working on that one. I got some pieces for it, and I got my Uno board, and I got everything that I needed to build it, and I just haven't actually built it yet. So, played around with that. What else do I do? I play Warhammer sometimes. The Warhammer, the miniatures game. So putting together miniatures and painting those. Not really a technical thing, but it's a very soothing hobby for me because I don't have to think as much. I just know that I have to very carefully shave down this guy's arm and then so it fits into its socket and then glue it so that it doesn't squish together and spew glue everywhere. And it's a soothing hobby for me.
Right, because every now and then you got to get your eyes off of pixels, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
You'll go blind.
Yeah, exactly. I like things that make me think and then things that don't make me think. So, like, most of my programming is me thinking really hard all day trying to figure out how to solve something. And then once I do, I don't ever want to think for the next couple days. So I'll do something like that. I'll go back to playing video games again. What else do I really do?
That's a lot, you know. Cause, I mean, especially with the amount of commitment to do, because teaching in general, the commitment that it takes to be a professor, a teacher is huge, in my opinion. Yeah. Do it right, you know.
Yeah, that's the caveat there, to do it right. It's one of those jobs where like it's full of problems and none of them are ever solved, because as soon as you think you've solved them, you have a new group of students come through that are completely different. So you have a whole new set of problems that need to be solved. So it's one of those jobs where nothing's ever truly fixed. So
it's like a scout troop.
It's like a scout troop.
Once you get the scout troop running the way you want it, you get the new guys to bridge over, and it all goes to hell again.
Yeah, exactly. Which actually, I need to find. We have one of our outreach guys. I gotta go find and talk to him because I had classes past Saturday and came in, and then there was a scout leader, one of the green patches, one of the district guys, who was actually here from the Central Florida Council, and I didn't get a chance to talk to him at the time. Then I came back in a few hours later to go like turn my key in for my classroom. And there was like three or four scouts here. So we were doing some kind of outreach program for scouts over the weekend. And I got to find out more about that because I haven't been in scouting for since 2005. So it's been a while.
Yeah, I know because I tried to get involved with our council down here a couple years back, but timing and other issues just didn't work out. But my father-in-law is still pretty big in scouts over the Eastern Shore. So he keeps me in the loop on what's happening. And like, you know, there's a, scouting is finally getting with the 21st century. Like, they actually killed the computer merit badge and they replaced it with like digital technology.
I saw some of their merit badge changes and it looked pretty cool. It looked like they were actually like updating. I was like, wow, that's shocking. I didn't
you think, wait, this is like a really conservative group. We're gonna have the picture of the Commodore 64 in our merit badge book forever. Yeah.
I almost bought a Commodore 64 the other day. I actually went to a flea market. There's a little street fair they had going on down here, and somebody had like an old vintage little shop, and it had like old board games, like the original Game of Life, and he had a Commodore 64 in the box. And I almost got it. It was like $20. I just couldn't bring myself to spend $20 on something I would never use. So,
God, yes.
It would sit on my desk and probably hold my monitor. So.
It could be. I mean, it could be an investment, though, too. I mean, one day, that if it's a Commodore 64 in the box, man, that's like, how many kids was that, like, the first computer?
It was actually not my first computer. It was actually, like, my third computer, because I actually went, like, we jumped around a little bit. Like, we had, it was an IBM Laser. It had, like, a 20 meg hard drive in it. You know,
it needs more. A five and a quarter
floppy drive on it, and that was great. And then we upgraded to one that had like a 1 gigabyte hard drive. That thing was like a small fortune to get that thing. And then that got put down in like the parents' computer room, so kids couldn't touch that one. That was expensive. And then my grandmother actually gave me a Commodore 64 that the school she had worked for gave to her that they didn't have a use for it anymore, so I got a Commodore 64. It was actually like my third computer, and it was a huge step back.
Right.
But she had so many games on it, that on like the big 5 1/4 floppies, I was like, oh, I'll sit here and play games all the time. So it became like a game console. It was like Nintendo, Super Nintendo, Commodore 64, and then the N64. So I went back a couple of generations before I continued to go forward again.
Sweet.
Oh. It was great. Tink Tonk and Buddy Bot Land. Yeah.
I do remember, I don't know what it was. My dad was working on something. I was sitting down with him. And I just saw the big shiny red light on the power strip.
Mm-hmm.
And he was working on doing something. And I just went, tink! And all, whenever he was programming in BASIC, it was like, gone.
Gone. Nothing saves or recovers.
Right.
What would you need that for?
Into the ether.
Yeah, my cat does that to me.
Yeah,
like when I wait till I'm playing video games and just walk over and she'll step on the power strip.
Trip.
God. You know, don't need that.
Time to feed me. Come
exactly.
On. So I try to keep these to around about an hour.
Okay.
Also, you want to get home and all that. So to kind of wrap this up, I guess two things. Other than the fact that, yes, mobile gaming software development is just in a constant state of flux because we're always adding new whiz-bang things to take advantage of new hardware or, you know, there's these, you know, people want to go, you know, Google introduces a new concept. So from your point of view, though, as an educator and someone who does this as a, you know, professionally and on the side, mobile development, what do you see, you know, the next 5 years, which I know is like impossible to predict. Is there anything that you see that, you know, this kind of like, and here's the things I'm thinking of, like, do you think like wearables is really going to catch on? You know, the Apple Watch, the Android
Android Wear.
What kind of things do you think that you're going to have to be teaching in 5 years that you're not teaching today? If you had to, if you had a crystal ball and you could pretend like you could guess, what would you think?
I honestly think the wearables things is going to take off. Everybody's starting to get into a little bit more. I mean, Apple's finally going to make it cool. I think that's what it's actually going to take. Cause I mean, you look at the smartphone. I mean, BlackBerry tried really hard with a smartphone and the Windows Mobile, and then Apple came out with their phone and made it cool. And everybody tried tablet computers, and putting Windows 7 on a tablet didn't work out really well, but people still tried to do it all the time, and or they tried to make gigantic Android phones and call them tablets. And then Apple put out the iPad, and it was cool. So,
unfortunately, for better or for worse, depending on how you like it.
Yeah, so it's like Android comes out and says, you know, this thing is going to be great. It's going to be the future. We got Android Wear. My boss really loves – he's got an LG – or not LG, the Moto 360 Android Wear device. He loves it. He actually uses it quite a bit, surprisingly, because he also had a Google Glass that used that quite a bit. And then I haven't seen it in almost 6-7 months now, so he hasn't worn that around as much. I actually had a Google Glass, and I sold mine because I just didn't have a use for it. But now the Apple Watch is going to come out, and Apple's going to tell everybody that they need it. And I think everybody's going to say, yes, Apple, I think we really need that.
Take the money.
But so I think the wearables thing is going to catch on. I mean, they're still trying to figure out, you know, it's one of those solutions without a problem right now. And I think the medical industry is really taking to it. Like a lot of the health tracker stuff that they put in it. My boss, again, actually is the only time he ever talks about his Google Glass now is he's actually working on a medical application that works with Google Glass. And that's a lot of where this is going is it's hands-free stuff that I think it's going to push towards in the medical field. But so wearable stuff I think is going to catch on. We're actually already starting to teach some of that here. It's kind of hard without it having a critical mass thing. We can't push it too hard. It's like a lot of people ask us every now and then, you know, why don't you teach Windows Phone? It's like, well, do you have one? No. It's like, well, then that's why we're not teaching it, because nobody has one.
Sorry. We would love to if.
Yeah, we teach mobile development, iOS and Android, you know, the things that have like 98% of the market. But I think the next like really big thing that they're pushing towards, and the media has actually picked up on it a lot the last few weeks, is moving into cars, actually, because and you spend a lot of time in your cars and your people are doing their commutes, especially if like you're out in LA and you're stuck in traffic for like 19 hours, which I think is probably on the low end.
Yeah, it's low, exactly.
So, I mean, Android Auto is coming out. I mean, they've been teasing it for a while. The first cars that are going to launch with Android Auto are supposed to be out this year. I tried to hold out for one. I just couldn't hold out long enough. I needed a new car. The Apple CarPlay is coming out around the same time. Apple's been hiring a lot of auto industry experts and like auto engineering experts lately that everybody thinks they're building a car. I don't know that they're going to be building one, but I know that they're definitely working on car technology. I mean, they've shown that they're taking that first step with CarPlay. I think it's going to be one of those things that really starts to take off is seeing more of these mobile platforms in other devices. So,
yeah, that's like, where
do you remember QT?
Is that the for like I know in Python the QT is how I draw my kind of GUI, right?
Yeah, it's a GUI system. I can't remember the original company that had it. It was like Gator something. It was bought up by Nokia, which I think it's actually owned by Microsoft now, which was
– It's funny how the whole
– Yeah, it gets passed around. Yeah. But it's a GUI library – or it's a GUI system that is used for lots of different devices. Like Nokia bought them, and they tried to put it on their Symbian phones. So they're I think you could put it on S60 phones and then like the Symbian Bell phones. That were out for about a month before they tanked them. But Migo devices, so the OS that never was, also supported QT. They tried to put it on mobile, but it was actually originally started on like a lot of the interfaces for like smart TVs in your fridge, like all those smart like kitchen appliances are built with QT. So I think it's kind of funny now that all these other OSs like Android and iOS are coming up on mobile devices, but now they're starting to spread into the other devices. Right. Whereas the QT took the we're going to be in embedded systems and then push onto mobile. And then Android and iOS right now is starting on mobile, and I think they're going to push out into every other device because mainly it's because they want your data. So most of those companies make their money.
The Internet of Things.
Just the Internet of Things.
Everything right. will have a chip in it, and it'll be sending it straight to the NSA, I mean to Google. I mean,
yeah, whatever. I mean, Google bought up Nest for their connected thermostats and CO2 detectors, and then they've led Nest with an acquisition of Dropcam for connected like home security cameras or just connected cameras in general. So I mean, they tried back in 2011 with Android at Home, that they hyped it up real big at their Google I/O conference, and then within 6 months, nobody was talking about it because nobody wanted it at the time. So now it's one of those things that's coming back, and people really like the Nest, and then they really like Dropcam. So now they're trying to make that. I think they're going to end up making that push again. So Nest and Dropcam are probably going to become Android at Home again.
Because it was the ADK, right? It was an Arduino based.
But I still have that. That's actually still a thing.
Is that still a thing?
That is still a thing. I actually
give me hope.
I used that at my last job actually, quite often. No, the ADK is actually just a way for your phone to be put in accessory mode, and then you have an Arduino board that's in host mode that it can actually host the phone and use all like the phone sensors and the phone information and the touch input and use it as a display. Or you can put your phone in host mode and then the USB accessory in accessory mode, and then actually access the device's sensors and then show it on the Android display. So it can go either way. So I actually did a little bit of work with that in my last job. We did some USB byte command stuff and pulling data from USB devices over the USB connection. So like mass storage devices, like learning how to read mass storage devices without having to mount them, which was kind of entertaining and really terrible to work on for a while because I had no idea what I was doing, but I got it working.
You give me hope because I know I remember it was like, what, 2012 at the Google I/O was the first time they showed it. And they showed it again in 13, but then I guess like last year or the last 2 years, there was no ADK and there was no more updates. I was like, oh man, it's dead.
It's still there, and it doesn't get as many big updates anymore because, I mean, it's pretty well supported and it's pretty stable right now. So there's not a whole lot of updates they need to make for it. So all the updates are the piece of hardware that connects to the device that you really need to make updates for. And most of the maker community is doing that. I mean, I see you got your little green guy back there, the laser pointer guy.
Yep, my little guy, he's all set up. He's coming. He's coming here. He's working.
Yeah, see? You hook that up to your Android phone, use the ADK, and you can control him and spin him around.
Well, and so here's – don't hate me, right? So I use the MIT App Inventor to do my app. Because I'm not smart enough. See, look.
There's a guy who takes on projects that really likes to work on things like this. So, I know a guy.
Well, I would want to know a guy. See, what I have to do now, I realize, I have to enroll in Full Sail University because it is one of the things that I want to learn. And I think with the Android Studio becoming like, now, okay, yeah, we're forcing down to this. So I think I may give it another shot with Studio. Mm-hmm. Is that as good? Would that be your recommendation?
Oh yeah, I definitely recommend that anybody starting Android development now would definitely use Android Studio. Eclipse was the dominant player for a long time, but they actually made it. I think they've stopped supporting it. I think they got like one guy named Charlie who sits in a closet who still does the updates for Eclipse because they're really slow and sometimes broken. The last update made it so that you actually had to uninstall everything and then reinstall it to update because you didn't like sign the package properly. But no, I would definitely use Android Studio for it. It's great. They've got a new dev, like I said before, they have a new DevByte series coming out that talks about how to use it. Lynda.com. You ever use Lynda.com?
I've heard of it, never used it, no.
So it's an online video education site. They do lots of really awesome classes. They have a lot of Android classes. They recently took a bunch of them down because they were just out of date, and they've been updating them. They put out new video tutorials for Swift. It's Apple's new programming language, so to do iOS apps. I've actually been using it to learn new things in Unity every now and then, which is pretty awesome. I was actually using it yesterday to figure out how to create basic models using Blender so that I could dump some low-poly models into my game. So it's a great site for learning things like that. That's usually where I do all of my own like new learning. That's my starting point is Lynda's my introduction, and then I branch out into documentation and stuff once I know enough about it to kind of get my feet wet a little bit more.
All right, I'm gonna do right by you. I'm gonna try to go back and learn it.
My problem
is like for me is most of my project, like, because I'm like the mirror to you. I'm mostly a hardware guy.
Yeah, I noticed you were all like almost entirely hardware.
And all I want to do is make a real quick GUI, a single screen. So, you know, because like you're like I have a little left button, little right button to move the motor left and right, and a little checkbox to turn the motor on and off. And I've got there's a guy, I forgot his name, wrote some code to do the Bluetooth part. So I sit there and I have my little HC05 connect to it.
Got one of them right here.
That's all I want to do. That's all. But to me, when I start and I go like manifest.xml and I start freaking out.
So oh, the manifest is great. Manifest is like your table of contents.
I'm a C guy.
Nah, your manifest is, it's all XML. XML is easy. Your manifest is just your table of contents. It tells you, you know, what components you have, what permissions you use. It's don't be scared of the manifest. It's not bad.
You know, it's amazing what difference just the 5-6 years you can make between generations.
Exactly. You enjoy your hardware. I'm going to continue learning software for it.
That's right. It takes both to make the world go round.
Exactly.
All right. So last thing, to wrap this up, you had to go back. You got it's Back to the Future. You get to go back in time. You get to talk to yourself. Or better yet, you go back and you get to talk to me when I wasn't quite a jerk. And I come – there goes my cat. I knew it.
I saw it.
There she was. She waited to the end. What advice do you give to the young Mike if I want to get into this world today? What things do I need to be doing? And I'm saying – let's assume I'm a junior, sophomore, high school. What should I be doing today to prepare myself to be in your shoes in, you know, 10 years?
I think I actually did it okay. Like that's one of the few things where I'm like, oh yeah, I actually think I did all right in getting to this industry. Like I haven't taken too many missteps in programming. So, if your school offers a programming class of any sort, it could be, you know, Visual Basic, which isn't used a whole lot anymore. It's still a really good intro programming language though. Anything that you can do, like right now, like are we going back in time? So it's like the limitations of then, or is it like I'm just going to be younger, but today?
It's like the new Star Trek, where it's not really
Star Trek.
It's a new timeline. It's not really the past. It's really an alternate universe. So like today,
there's so many more resources today than there are than there were then. Like,
so what would you do to yourself today if your then was now?
My then was now. What would I do today? I would get a lynda.com subscription immediately because there's a giant like wealth of information there. It's probably like the best like hub to start. You can cover graphic things. You can cover animations. You can cover programming, web, mobile, desktop. It's like a matter. It's just, what do you want to learn really? If your school offers a programming class, I would definitely take it, even if it's a basic intro one, just to find out if it's for you. Cause it's not for everybody too. Like most, like, programming is not the most glamorous career. Most people have like the visions that they get on shows of sitting there like intensely typing and staring at a screen. It's more like staring at a screen and lazily typing, leaning back, wondering why your feet hurt. It's not a bad career. It's just, you know, it's not for everybody. Sure. And it requires, you know, like if you like solving problems, like I would find anything that requires solving problems. Hell, I went through Boy Scouts, and Boy Scouts had a lot of solving problems in it. And sometimes that whole, you know, being able to logically step through a problem, is what helps you figure out if you're going to be a good programmer or not. So I would find anything where you can solve problems. If you find a problem, think of interesting solutions for it. If they offer it at least an intro programming class, take it and see if it's for you. I mean, it's, like I said, not for everybody, so see if it's even for you. If it's not for you, that's great. You've just saved yourself, you know, 10 years of trying to force yourself down that road. If it is for you, continue to find other programming classes. Like I said, get a lynda.com subscription. If you don't want to pay for a lynda.com subscription, there are lots of great engineering and programming channels on YouTube that are free that you can go and find. One that my students actually really like is a guy called Slide Nerds on YouTube that does lots of Android tutorials. He talks really loud and angrily, but it's really, really good information. So you don't get the nice soothing tones of like Simon Allardyce, who's my favorite narrator on Lynda.com, just because he's British and he's got like that really deep soothing voice. Like I have him read me bedtime stories, I would fall asleep. But
it's always better British.
If you don't want to pay for the nice soothing British voice, you can get the guy yelling at you on YouTube for free, but it's still really good information. And just try lots of different things out. Code School online, Teen Treehouse. They offer programs, video lectures. Some of them are free. Some of them you'd have to pay for, but at least offer introductions that are free that you can do small projects. And they'll actually show you in the video, like, hey, this is how it's supposed to be done. Here's some resources. You know, here's an evaluation tool to determine if you did it right. Lots of free resources out there. And what's the other really big one right now? Khan Academy, Sal Khan. Khan Academy is real big as well. They offer some really good programming tutorials on there as well. So lots of different tools that are out there that are free that are just amazing that weren't available to me. Like I had to go through my AP computer science class and I had to go to the community college because there wasn't anything that I could really go to that wasn't even that long ago. That was 10 years ago. 10 years ago, that wasn't all out there. So take advantage of it. Kids
these days, they don't know how easy they have it.
They don't. There's a wealth of resources out there that you could teach yourself the basics of pretty much any kind of programming or any kind of technical thing out there, just the basics of it for free online. My other really big one that I really, really like is Coursera classes because you can get that whole traditional education feel in a free class that you take online that you don't have any obligation, that if you get tired halfway through and this isn't for you, you can completely stop doing it. There are no consequences. Or if you get really hooked and you want to learn more, there are lots more classes on there than they're all free. So doing Coursera classes are fantastic. They offer, like I have actually, when I was starting to do the Arduino stuff, they offer an intro to electronics class that explains what all of these little things that I'm plugging into this board are. And that was great because I had no idea what I was doing. So Coursera is really good for that as well.
Cool. Good advice.
Lots of things, man. There's so much, so much.
Just go out and get your hands dirty. Just do it.
Drink from the fountain of information that is the internet.
Sweet. All right. Well, I'm going to wrap it up here because I'm probably going to have to do math homework here in a minute. We're in the long division.
You got half an hour. You're good.
Using the Common Core system. It takes me a half hour to get into the zone. I have to go back and try to learn how they're teaching kids today to do division, which is like using hieroglyphics, basically.
I've seen some of the methods, and they're rather interesting because I looked at it, and I had no idea what they're writing. Like, I have no idea whatsoever. And then it's explained to me, like, oh, yeah, I do that in my head. And it's like, oh, that's why they teach it that way now.
Yeah,
I can see some of that.
The thing that blows my mind is like, you know, like you were saying, you do it a way in your mind, like multiplication, division, whatever. You do it, there's a way that in your mind it works.
Mm-hmm.
With this Common Core stuff, it's like we wanted to teach you every possible way so that, you know, and it makes sense because everyone does it a little bit differently. The problem is they ask you to show it like five different ways and it should be like, no, just show the way.
Pick one of these ways that is most comfortable for you and do it that way.
And do it. But they force the kids to show it like eight different ways, which, you know, frustrates everybody involved.
Everybody involved. Yeah. Yes. That's going to be a whole other conversation,
That's
too.
That's going to be a whole other one. So I will end it there. Michael Seely, Professor Seely, Full Sail University, thank you, sir, for coming on and sharing your infinite wisdom with everybody. I appreciate it, man.
Thank you for having me. Like I said, I've listened before, and it's nice to be a part of it, so.
One day I'm going to like get serious about this and actually invest in like decent cameras and stuff. But for now, this is just a hobby. It has gotten me a little bit of notoriety and something.
If you want to be serious, I've got my Snowball mic over here. I can use that next time. Pick up a little bit better sound.
You were beautiful, man. Beautiful.
Thank you.
As always. So next time I get down to Florida, I got to come back and see you again. Go to, you got to give me a tour next time, man. Next time I am demanding a tour.
Dude, they have riverboat tours around here, like the little tiny like paddle boats.
No, I want, I want a full sail university tour, man.
You can have one of them too.
I want one of those.
You'll have to come down when we do our behind the scenes tour. We actually have once a month we do a big old behind the scenes tour, put on a big show. Everybody comes out. We get the tours of campus, workshops for your degree program. You do hear from the president of the university. We feed you for the day. It's great. So.
I will cry.
Big shindig. So do it once a month. It's great.
Oh, I'm there. I just got to now convince the people to send me back down there.
Well, you work on that, and I will let you know when the behind-the-scenes tours are, and we'll work one out.
We'll figure this out. All right, Mr. Seeley, until next time, thank you very much. And, really, really, really appreciate this. It was awesome.
No, it was great. Thank you.
All right. Take care, man. All right. Well, that does it for the interview. I hope you found that as enlightening as I did. It is such a different school, such a different mindset, that I just, just from a STEM, STEAM education perspective, find it very, interesting. And then just from the actual, the technology, the mobile development, the video game development, movie production, it's just fun. If I could, I'd probably go back to school and I'd go there. It's just awesome. So big thank you to Mike. Thank you for agreeing to do this. It's greatly appreciated. And, I've got a couple other, folks. I'm going to have a couple more friends I want to interview. I got very lucky. I got really good friends that kind of, picked kind of weird, diverse, but they're all kind of science, technology related. So I've got another friend who is still in the Navy. He is an electronics tech, and I'm going to try to get him on for an interview as well. But he is in Japan, so we got to work out the 13-hour or whatever time difference, 14 hours. And being in the Navy, he's on a ship a lot. So that's another issue. And then I've got some other people, some other people that I've met later in life, that I want to get on here as well. So I'm committed to doing this. I think these are really good. I mean, the whole bringing you the STEM news is cool, STEAM news. But I think every now and then we break it up and we do these interviews and kind of, get a little bit more real world, I think is cool too. So with that, thank you all very, very much for listening. Again, big, huge thank you to Mike for doing the interview. I appreciate it. And you can follow along at steampowerpodcast.com. There's links to everything else. And then really the other big site we use is Google Plus. So we're up there at google.com/plussteampowerpodcast. And if you want to see the video and see nerds talking to each other, you can do that over on YouTube at the Steam Power channel. So with that, I will shut up and thank you all very, very much for listening. And until next time, keep it quirky, stay steamy. I don't know. I always get that wrong. If Lisa's not here, she can't keep me straight. But until next time, have a great week and thank you.